Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of me questioning, why can't it be shorter? Why is this week 2.5 hours when you seemingly had the same amount of content to offer me, but I still had to watch a much, much longer show? We'll get to it. I had a reaction when I saw the length of the show. I was like, oh, I loved it last week. Well, loved is a strong word. I had much better time last week. Run Late Raw was only 1 hour 50 when it was shorter than SmackDown. This week, back to 2.5 hours. Also, we're doing some sort of basketball fantasy team thing over in the basketball Discord channel within our Discord. If you join our Discord, you can then go over to the basketball channel within there. And we're doing a little pick-em-z type of thing. I think. I don't know basketball good. That's putting it mildly. I don't know basketball at all. I know nothing. But I've been told it's fun. And to plug it, so there we go. Done it best plug ever. Anyway, in terms of the rest of this show, we had SmackDown from New Orleans with The Rock with his segment. We have Monday Night Raw in the final show before the Elimination Chamber in Toronto. And the reverberation from what happened on SmackDown. Also, we've had the launch of LFG, the new kind of Tough Enough reality TV show. If you've watched Tough Enough, you know exactly what beats are going to be happening within LFG. And it's a reality TV show. There's not too much variation in terms of what to expect. Yeah. You know what to expect. It's one of those ones. So if you enjoy that kind of content, there you go. Content, innit? There's more WWE stuff. But also there is the launch of Evolve as well. I'm going to be talking about neither of those things. Just, you know, wider business-wise, just, you know, it's a little bit interesting that WWE, what they did with Evolve, basically closing down the company. Now they're opening up again their own thing. And, you know, you can't have any, contract tampering issues if you own all of the independents through the WWE ID. Or it's working as some form of weird filter system where it's like, you are building all of the future. Let's not forget, WWE has a history of contract tampering. It's not just AEW. They had the same accusations from TNA. They had the same accusations from Ring of Honor. Like, it's not new. These accusations that happened under AEW, not new. But, you know, you can circumvent that with the WWE ID system. So anyway, that's my little thing on the Evolve show. I have absolutely no plans to cover that. I have no plans to cover WWE ID stuff. Obviously, things can change. Landscapes can shift. I'm European. Fair to say, I'm currently very, very aware about landscapes and things shifting and changing. But currently, absolutely zero plans to cover. I've not got any plans to cover NXT either. I'm perfectly fine covering my Raw and SmackDown, mostly because I would quite like energy to still watch AEW when I want to. If I watch NXT, that's just too much wrestling. That's just too much. And that actually does lead to the final thing I want to talk about before I get into this show, is that with the actual ratings with Netflix, the ratings for the live shows for Monday Night Raw, like, they got their initial massive pilot, and that first episode did really well. Then subsequently, people haven't stayed. There isn't this weird, like, oh, maybe we're just not tapping into this wrestling audience. That audience seemingly doesn't exist. The numbers again have gone down, and I don't know whether to just put it down to the very basic thing of, if you are somebody new that's trying to get into this, then you have a 3-hour Monday Night Raw show, you've got the 3-hour SmackDown show, you've got NXT, and you have to watch all of these things every single week, and then there's the pay-per-views as well. So if you talk about the sheer amount of content that you need to be consuming every single month to keep up with this new thing, this new hobby that you possibly do through the Netflix app, it's asking a lot. So that's going to cut out a lot of normal people. people. Like, WWE isn't very... It's not a system that really lends itself to the casual Netflix viewing, in a way. If you do treat it as something where you drop in and out, just like, you guess, a lot of TV audience would do, then it works fine. Like, it's still absolutely fine. But as far as I can tell, they don't include the non-live numbers. And I would be very interested to see what are the actual numbers. Netflix don't really give a lot of numbers, but obviously if somebody's gotten used to just getting TV data and stuff all the time for the ratings for all these shows, part of me still has that thing of, but I'd like to know. Like, because I feel like internationally, that's like a huge thing, just to have all those numbers within the same app and network rather than spread across different networks or whatever. Just to have all of those numbers right there. So yeah, but how many people are watching the non-live version? Because someone like me, I watch the live show, I would be included in those first figures that first night, but I'm never going to do that again. To be fair though, I'm not part of the advertising demographic, so don't matter. That's the other way to look at it. But yeah, the numbers aren't exactly taking off, and they have relatively dipped quite a bit. The reason I brought up the stuff to do with the live shows is it actually quite a difficult bubble to penetrate and get into, because there's just so much content to consume and stay up to date with on a weekly and then monthly basis. In a Netflix-y era, does this current shape of WWE work? Which I feel like is an interesting discussion to have. 8 hours a week plus a pay-per-view which takes you over into double figures. Which is just insane. Like, it's a lot. And of course in America they're on different streaming services. But I would be interested to see what are the non-live video figures, what are they like? Because they would include the wider international audience, and that's when you get an actual feel for just how many people are watching this. That is a way higher number than what you're getting on the American live stream version. Because if anything, I'm an advertiser for the non-live version, and I will constantly say, don't watch it live, don't watch the live version, it's a horrible experience. And that's me saying that as a wrestling fan who watches this routinely every single week. So anyway, let's jump on over to SmackDown. 2 hours and 2 minutes on Netflix for me, and live on USA for them. Let's jump on over to New Orleans and whatever the hell this Rock promo was.
This championship, my championship, their championship, this is what this is about. You want...
No, 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 no. No. I don't want that. I want your soul.
It's WrestleMania season, which means it's time to curtail yet another WrestleMania road. What the hell was this? Seemingly with a perfectly nice storyline, possibly, with John Cena. They're all set up there, and you could do John Cena fading again, just with really put over this generation. It's in that kind of match. I was like, you know what? I really like that story. You could possibly go there. What I wasn't expecting was The Rock. Because I watched the Netflix debut, and I've watched different things afterwards, and The Rock basically convinced me that there is no plan. Nothing convinces me more there's no plan than going on television and at the end of the show saying, stop whining, trust us, there's a plan, maybe there's a planning thing, maybe you should quit whining. It's like, normally when that's said, that's because there wasn't a plan. Nothing screams to me more that there was no plan than feeling the need to go on national television and say, oh, stop whining, obviously there's a plan, stop whining about it, maybe you should think about that. Huh. You don't come off as the better guy here, you just convince me to double down that there is no plan. But on the Netflix debut, The Rock seemingly wasn't the final boss, he was just more like Showman the Rock doing the odd final boss type of line. It's all really self-congratulating, and he gave a little nod to Cody Rhodes, seemingly as well. This promo hinted back at that. It seemed to be trying to take the Super Eye Patch Wolf thing, trying to fold reality back into unreality. That's how I took this promo. It was The Rock's promo on the Netflix debut, seemingly wasn't entirely in character, but everybody saw it, so now you're trying to fold back in all the bullshit within that back into a wrestling storyline. The thing is, it doesn't fit really with a lot of the stuff that comes beforehand. You somehow got to tie over and just like, well, off camera, me and Cody became friends. Oh, right, cool, just off camera. Cool, given the whole big battle and everything that happened on Monday Night Raw afterwards and the night after WrestleMania, the storyline hook with The Rock whispering something into his ear, I think he gave him something as well, all of that just dropped. It feels like something from my past era, just still existing and still swimming around in this completely new and different creative space. But we kicked off the show with Nick Aldis telling Cody the six-man tag was off because of the final boss. The second hour hit with If You Smell. The Rock came in out to what I think was a Narlins special little rap thing before kicking into the usual final boss theme. All cheery, happy Rock hitting the catchphrases with the crowd, announcing that WrestleMania is coming back to New Orleans in 2026. Big pyro, boom, 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 logo reveal, which looks very similar to past logos, but no, they've been to New Orleans a lot. It's going to happen. And all of that felt very, very similar to the kind of delivery that we got in the Netflix debut. The Rock seemingly speaking in very similar manners, like, okay, so this is almost like Company Rock. Then they swing into a promo, and they bring out Cody Rhodes. And Company Rock maybe wasn't the worst note for me to have made when I saw that. They're now turning that side of The Rock into a character, where he will come out and he'll do company stuff, and then he'll swing into character stuff. I've seen this before. This is Stephanie McMahon. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting that comparison to ever be a thing. Be like, oh, The Rock's receiving a modern-day Stephanie McMahon booking, where you go out and you do your corporate shill stuff, and you do all your clappy-clappy-da-da-da, and in a sudden moment, you can switch into storyline and then back again. You go out and you get the applause, you get all those clappy corporate stuff. Like, yeah, we've done this for business. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you swing into character. But you somehow got to disassociate one from the other. She used to be like very smiley and very clappy when she sits a company announcement thing. And then a character would then swing to be doing evil things. And they were all puzzle pieces that didn't fit together. So she started to feel not really like a character. And to be fair, in that era, you got loads of really, really badly written authority figures. And you just jump from one to the next. And they desperately tried to recreate that Stone Cold magic and never could. But here they're going with something different with the dynamic. The Rock being this absolutely huge megastar who then on Netflix thing started to do a few corporate lines, came out here, also did like a little corporate promotion-y thing. So he is alternating between Final Boss and Corporate Rock. But they folded stuff in. And for me, this felt like a promo which was trying to make Corporate Rock a thing. I kind of took it as hindsight-wise, trying to use what happened back on the Netflix debut and make it make sense because it didn't make sense. And then basically going, he's got a side to him that's a bit corporate-y and he'll just flick that switch and he'll do corporate stuff. Everyone gets a cheer, yay, yay, and then go back into character. And he's The Rock. He's charismatic enough to carry it off. I mean, that's one thing. That is a bit where the comparison dies a little bit. The Rock's a little bit more charismatic than Stephanie McMahon. So if anyone's going to be able to pull off this dynamic of that very sudden switches, which are jarring and don't fit, they're not puzzle pieces that go together at all. But he's charismatic enough just to take you with such force, but into that next part that you start, the minute ago where he's just going, oh yeah, aren't we all happy about New Orleans? Oh, you've got syphilis, you have. Don't know why he's got a West Country accent as a Rocky. Oh, you, with syphilis over there. But we did swing into Cody Rhodes stuff. For me, it's part of what made this feel weird, is he got two versions of The Rock within the same promo, where he started off as corporate Netflixy Rock and then went into Final Boss Rock, and they don't fit together, they don't gel, but created some form of corporate storyline for Rocky. So swinging into Cody promo time, setting us up with a little few STD insults with the crowd. Rhodes given a big entrance and a loving reaction, pyro and all, given all the time to have the pomp and circumstance for him, before Rocky stated that they've become good friends off camera since WrestleMania last year. They even had a great time drinking tequila after the Raw Netflix debut. But here's the thing, you are a great champion. For some reason, showing a picture of their mums being good friends the other time, I was just watching it, it's been like, this is bizarre. But I called you out here because I need you to understand something. The Rock is on the board of TKO. TKO owns WWE. He doesn't own WWE, but he is the most powerful. Just letting that hang in the air for a second. Hinting at a nudge at Cody getting the offer of being Rocky's corporate champion. But he's the babyface of babyfaces. Like, Rocky, I think you know, I'm their champion. Rocky promising all the things that Cody could have if he does, though. Or the dreams he could accomplish. I just need you to be my champion. Cody gesturing to the title like this. This is what you want? Like, no. No, no, no. I want your soul. And as soon as I watched this segment on Monday, I suddenly understood all the Sunny in Philly gifts that were being sent in the social suplex people's chat within over the weekend. It's like, I jumped in because I like Sunny in Philadelphia, so I can jump in. I can riff off that bit. Didn't know why it was being posted. Then I watched this. I was like, oh, he literally said the line. But number one question, what? But secondly, why now? This is so strange, it just happened now. Rock will be in Toronto for the answer at Elimination Chamber. I watched this on Monday. Like, I've had time to digest, to think about it. But also, Monday Night Raw did form the pieces a bit stronger. Like, SmackDown was almost trying to make sense of stuff in hindsight, which made no sense. But you've been set up, you've been primed to put the pieces together. Then Raw did that. They used the characters to put those pieces together and make it in-universe make sense via Cody Rhodes trying to make sense of it. It's where you're with Cody making sense of the Rock's promo. I feel like it's out of all the ways to try and naturally make this weird thing kind of work, that is a really strong way to do it. You're not very likely to get fans turning on this. Yes, of course, it's with charismatic people that are incredibly over that the crowd will love, but also you put the effort in on Monday Night Raw. You gave the time to just let everybody digest and go, well, that was weird, but it's also got such strong ramifications, and you've got decisions going to be happening at Elimination Chamber, which is more time to flesh out whatever this is. So when I watched SmackDown, I was just very confused. I thought the entire thing was strange, especially as it's trying to fold back in, not in character Rock, with in character Rock, so it's already pegs and different holes. It's always going to feel a bit janky, but they are putting in the in-universe effort to make it make sense. If you put in the time and effort, you can make anything make sense within your world. you just see it quite a lot where that effort part isn't put in and then the payoff doesn't feel deserved. I mean, there's good movies that come out every single year, so you also see it done really well all the time, but especially in wrestling. So let's see what on earth is happening here. I'll wait to Elimination Chamber before really passing it off, because the reason I brought up The Rock earlier talking about, well, maybe we're doing something here, why didn't you think about that? I got that reaction from SmackDown. When I watched SmackDown and it was weird, I was like, oh, that is a bit odd. But that felt like setting up for something, to try and make something make sense and set up a storyline, and Monday Night Raw just confirmed that. But that's not what I felt after watching that debut on Netflix. That didn't feel like Rock setting anything up. It just felt totally out of character and just a bit corporate-y, just a bit naff, a bit corporate cringe. But that's not the feeling I'm getting from this. For me, this is a great example of the difference. What happened on SmackDown, that's the difference. That's what it actually feels like, where it doesn't really make sense, but you're getting the feeling that they're setting something up here. WWE writing and things is many things, but subtle isn't really one of them. They do things that are more subtle than others, but yeah, isn't there? Anyway, let's jump over to what happened in the rest of the show. We'll get to just a little bit more talk about that with what happened on Raw. But the main event of Smackers was Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa versus Braun Strowman and Damian Priest. Solo continued to fail to play leader. Jacob and Tama, both full of confidence knowing they've been able to hold down the show and lock it down without him, and arguably making bigger waves doing so. During the backstage walk, Fatu cuts Solo Sikoa off in the hype talk, and it was his music that hit as they both walked out. Proof of how much of a difference better music makes. Even Solo felt more badass coming out to Jacob's music. Like, hell, I proposed the two Samoan men WrestleMania-ing as a Fatu showcase last week, but how about a recognised change with Solo eventually getting behind his cousin? Or you use this, that latter part, to fuel the former. You can do both, really. Within the build, make it that happening, but Solo's a character who's never going to accept that, and that's what leads to the blow-off. Different ways you can go. The match itself, absolutely fine. Four big lads charging about in more orderly affair compared to last week's triple threat open. Boos whenever Solo tagged in. We want Jacob until he tagged back. Like, fuck. That's a dynamic that genuinely works. Like, oh no. They've fallen onto something here. Big Braun bowed both Blood Boys over the announce desk. Solo left alone in the ring, took the South of Heaven pin. The Bloodline set the world ahead of Solo, but it was clear he wasn't the right actor for the role they had him in. And I won't lie, I'm instantly more in on this new dynamic with Jacob Fatu. Solo Sikoa not being the main character, he really does work. He works when he's not the main guy. Immediately when I saw it here, I was like, oh yeah, when he's acting as some form of supporting character with Jacob Fatu, it immediately worked. When I'm watching him attack Cody, I don't give a shit. When I'm watching him with the dynamic with Jacob Fatu, this is where Solo Sikoa really does work. But this was a SmackDown Nuts show where you had your tag main event and you had your The Rock promo, and everything else falls into the other notes. It's one of those ones. Drew McIntyre got his one-on-one with The Uso. Too busy chatting shit got his Alabama Slam rolled through into a Jimmy win. A post-match Scottish greeting got the big man his heat back. Tiffany Stratton cut a promo with Nia and Candice ahead of Charlotte Flair. She had the ill standard build for a match, tag match that's going to be on a pay-per-view. Candice LeRae, as we got Flair commentating. She wasn't great. she's not great at commentating. Nia's post-match beating wasn't stopped by Charlotte, but it was by Trish. Speaking of Canada, Canada's own Kevin Owens cut another phone promo, revealing he was in Sammy's house filming the man and his family. We got Sammy Dancer on Monday Night Raw. The reluctant Mellow Don't Miz tag team is going to get over. I am warning you now. They faced R-Truth with a surprise Louisiana night, because he stupidly thought LA meant LA, Louisiana. It's funny, isn't it? Knackers interfered so LA could lose protected. School-crushing finale Codebreaker combo already had a name in spite of the team being reluctant and the match unknown to Mellow till before the ad break. It's a Mellow Don't Miz tag team. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Matt. Just move on. It doesn't matter. Zelina Vega got a video promo VTR play. Cyberpunk City backdrop, talking all confident, leaning on a motorbike. Why not give it a go? She never really got given a solid gimmick whenever she got like a solo push. If she got a solo push, it was a bullshit like Queen Zelina. So, no, an honest attempt. Like, I want to be against at least giving it an honest attempt. Staying with the women, in a backstage segment when questioned about Liv and Raquel, Naomi said that she knew they were the ones who attacked Jade. Her match with Liv got thrown out before a big fuffle. Flair and Bliss also got VTR character plays. Purposely in my notes as Bliss, as so I don't get my Amazon Echo turning on. Poor hashtag DIY. They had to follow Rocky and get a semi-confused crowd back on track with the show. They had a championship match with Pretty Deadly. but it was just a staging for Street Profits interference and the Motor City Machine Guns failed save. So yeah, a SmackDown that really was only two segments that were really worth watching, but with the Rock segment, that's one where that grabs all of the attention and kind of just warps everything else around it, and you get a little bit more time with it on Monday Night Raw. So I think I'll just sort of jump over to that. It's a similar thing with happened with every other SmackDown I've covered since the Royal Rumble. So yeah. It's fine, isn't it? Yeah. It's absolutely fine for you guys to just not watch these shows and tune in for the Elimination Chamber, as long as you know who's qualified, as you kind of know what they're setting up a bit. You don't need to watch 2 hours of this shit. Anyway, let's jump on over to Cincinnati, Ohio for Monday Night Raw live on Netflix. I did say it earlier, but after last week's swish 1 hour 50, I felt this swing back to 2.5 hours. Like, oh baby. I saw that time and I went, oh for damn it. And I felt the length of this show. I really felt it. I flew through SmackDown. That seemed to have just so much filler that I felt like I was skipping like so just all the time on Smackers. So I got through that show in like an hour. I got through it so quickly. I felt like I was like genuinely watching quite a few segments. And like, yeah, I got this 2 hour show. I got through it in half the time. This Monday Night Raw one took me ages. So let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw to CM Punk's Promise and Cody's Dilemma.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas mini bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Rock is saying that I could have it without having to fight, scratch, claw.
The Rock's got to pay the troll toll to get the champ's soul. But first, I jump over to the start of the show. The hometown transphobe opened the show, ragging on the crowd and lads in the Elimination Chamber before CM Punk's music interrupted us. There's never been any character easier for Punk to act irritated by. And it felt like we got some of the first genuine... Maybe because we're in front of Ohio and he can't bullshit Ohio when it comes to the transphobe. Like, they know about him and his stuff too well. It felt like CM Punk maybe got to cut a promo, which felt some of the most honest narrative about the guy that we've seen in WWE. Because you're not going to hear Japan brought up on WWE TV. You're not going to hear about him grifting kids that we support on WWE TV. You're not going to hear about him sharing misinformation. Like, none of that stuff's going to be there. But CM Punk, he got some lines that felt like these are the strongest digs we've seen. Obviously, nothing close to just bringing up genuine reasons to genuinely hate him. So whenever he hears a character says, oh, is that why you hate me? The reason it kind of works is because they're not the reasons you hate him. Kind of feels like, as a performer, he knows they're not the reasons, but it does work because it feeds into his character having this massive ego. It's like, oh, you don't like me because I'm just too good, I'm just too brilliant, you're jealous of me, you're jealous of me because I'm successful, because I'm rich. And CM Punk can just be like, no. It felt like he got to do the best cutting stuff into that. More often than not, you'll get like a generic kind of reply to that, whilst this felt like the most reality based cutback to the transphobe's character speaking like that. Punk's going, honestly, dime a dozen, loudmouth kid, says and does incredibly stupid and ignorant things for a reaction, for the shock of it, and that makes you think you're a generational talent. No character, no substance, and these people, they deserve better. So obviously, not mentioning or really referring to anything specific, but basing reality enough to cut through the transphobe bullshit. To be like, we don't actually hate you for any of those reasons. And I felt like it's a pretty good summation, in a way, of why he gets actual hate, without being specific. Punk promised to make history, whilst the transphobe will be history. I'm Satan himself, and in this business, you're nobody. Genuinely great lines from CM Punk. Slap and run in response to set up the guy not being able to do that latter bit on Saturday in the Elimination Chamber. Also felt like the most in-character response for that moment for that guy. It felt just that's exactly how he would respond. Nowhere near intelligent enough, while CM Punk is this like more methodical, like Jake Roberts in a way. He plays that intellectual character. Whilst the other guy's character, Like, he isn't playing a smart character, which unsurprisingly seems very easy for him to play. It's a him not being smart enough to think of any reply, so instead just goes for a little cheeky thing, but immediately knows that he can't stand up to Punk. The main interesting note being old Punkerton bringing up not caring if Cody's going to have to sell his soul to beat him. A nice little note for if Cody's not the one to ultimately sell his soul in the end. Not getting my hopes up though. Like, WWE habits die hard, and if Roman Reigns is finally top dog big boy hero, then there's normally one role second place plays. Which takes me to Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins later in the show. Because this is a new creative era, and there's easily room for Cody to dance a different tune to the eventual third match with Reigns. As we transition nicely into the final hour and the WWE Undisputed Champions promo, Cody made it clear that the reply to Rock's offer isn't one he's deciding alone. Burn It Down coming out of the Titantron, and walking through the entranceway is a blood-red, shiny vinyl raincoat Sethy Boo. He had something to say on that line, playing the role of the lad stating the obvious. Why are you even considering it? Don't make me regret everything that I sacrificed to help you win that championship. Referring to WrestleMania last year, they made a big deal of this being the first time that Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes had stepped in the ring together since that moment at WrestleMania where Seth helped him win. And I couldn't be asked to check if that was true. My gut instinct was it wasn't, but I don't know. I'm just used to whenever WWE makes a big statement like that, I'm just used to it just being easily researchable that it's not true. So my gut instinct now is that whenever they say something, that it's inaccurate. It could be true. It could be like a decent little moment. I just don't believe them on instinct anymore. Cody's reply was genuinely great, bringing up Seth's actions from the past, describing who he is, hitting him with a sledgehammer after shaking his hand at their Hell in a Cell match, breaking up the Shield and joining the authority that ran guys like Cody out of the WWE 10 years ago, twisting things nicely into Seth getting his turn to be teased as the lad to win the Elimination Chamber and come after Rhodes' title. I'm not coming after your soul, but I am coming after that title. I do like that they're giving each guy just a little moment to hang with Cody in the ring to do a tiny little tease. Damien Priest was just gonna, they just coolly stared at each other. But we've had CM Punk, we've had Drew McIntyre, we've had all different guys all get in that ring and talk with Cody. Basically make their case. Because unfortunately, the favourite for it in John Cena isn't there. So he can't cut his version of the promo. He's just not available. He's not there to build the hype. So they've done a very, very decent job of setting up everybody else as at least, like, they've created a path for all of them, which I like. I like creating different paths for all the different guys so that when something else happens, it felt like there was a possibility. And speaking of WrestleMania possibilities, let's jump on over to the Women's Elimination Chamber match, because the main event was the Women's Tag Team Championship, Bianca Belair and Naomi versus Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, women's tag in the main event. Liv and Raquel out with 24 minutes on the clock. What is happening? What is this? And it genuinely was the main event. There was no next segment. However, don't worry, after Liv and Raquel's entrance, WWE cut to an ad break. Had a backstage promo between Jey Uso and Alpha Academy in the trainer's room before setting up a match with A-Town Down Under, then ran down the matches for Raw next week, then Naomi and Bianca came out. So don't worry, the pre-bell kerfuffle began with 15 minutes left for your main event. Like, don't expect me to be super invested in your main when you've dragged my focus and attention all over the place in between entrances. Oh, and 2.5 minutes in, yep, time for a 3-minute ad break. Just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Constantly doing everything to take away my attention from the match until it's time for the final part. And that final part was all the good notes for this. Liv and Raquel's flapjack codebreaker combo was genuinely awesome. Used as a nearfall because their singles finishes are still the actual enders, but there's your tag finisher. It looked great. The crowd piped back awake after the Dom Mysterio interference, hyping up into This Is Awesome after a flash of finish of the last second saves. Still hyped after the baddies got to do the same after the KOD, so there's only one chant to flow into. Holy shit. Bianca and Naomi hitting their double KOD, only for Dom to put Liv's leg on the ropes, swinging into Raquel taking out Belair, Naomi, Raquel, and serving every baddie opportunistic tactic with Naomi fending off every one of them, until Raquel halted the moonsault, fought off, but driving Naomi's head into the ring post via the Texans' outside fall. Liv just crawled over and scored the pin. Like, hey, it's time for the Jade Cargill arc, so you gotta get those titles off of them. We're kicking into full storyline gear. You're doing something else, so you can't be tag team champions. The show going off air with Cole going full hype on Liv Morgan. Imagine if she wins the Elimination Chamber on Saturday. What a week that would be for Liv Morgan. So either they're setting up for that to actually happen because they've got no other storyline for Rhea Ripley, or it's immediately setting him up to fail because he went in way too hard. Either way, he went in way too hard. I don't think that part's up for debate. The Women's Intercontinental Championship, live Valkyria versus Dakota Kai. Halfway through the show, a perfectly grand WWE telly bout. A statement which means two very different things when talking about WWE or AEW. In this case, it's your grand three-star telly affair. A holy shit after Lyra's own superplex had her landing on a bit too much head, going at a lovely pace for the final flows, and the crowd responded. Ohio was much louder than last week's crowd all night, but they were actually up for the wrestling too, which is crazy. I know. Still got fatigued by the end of the show, but they were generally up for the wrestling compared to last week, where it felt like whenever any wrestling was happening, they were just on their hands, not really caring. Valkyria retained with a Nightwing after Dakota did a great job for a second time making the last look grand. Then it's WWE story time. Ivy Nile attacking after the bell. For that heat, brother. The exact kind of talent this title exists to give a space to develop. I'd be lying if the crowd were particularly bothered or seemed to give any shit. Later in the show, Nile questioned by Kathy Kelly with the creeds behind her, reminding us that Gable's training with a master luchador and that American Made are all going after gold, which signaled the War Raiders attack. Still don't. It doesn't make in world sense why the War Raiders would be so angry at American Made getting themselves DQ'd, because the War Raiders could just move on. In my head, it's like, well, they cost themselves the match by not being able to keep their cool. So, as champions, you could just forget about it and move on. But in WWE wrestling logic, it's, oh, you attacked us with a da-da-da. That means, oh, it's gonna lead to another match because he got all that heat. So you're gonna see them properly beat them up. My assumption is American Made are going to win the title as well. It just makes it feel so strange. Like, earning your own DQ when you had a title match on television, in my head, means that the challengers lost their opportunity and the title holders move on. Not in WWE. And then straight into the other notes. It's one of those Raws, 2.5 hours, and that they were all my proper notes. Sami Zayn got a sit-down interview with Jackie, reacting to Kevin's promo after Smackers, promising that their unsanctioned match in Toronto is going to be a war, a nice, serious build to their match in Toronto. If you want to hear my actual thoughts on this so far, I talked about it at length last week, but really I am very interested to see how an unsanctioned match works in modern day WWE. What actually is it? Is it just a plunder? I hope it's not just a plunder. I'm expecting something better than a plunder, but something that's nowhere near as good as what we've been served via unsanctioned matches in AEW. It's going to be somewhere in between. The World Heavyweight Champion Gunther dressed for battle, aka cut a promo in his underpants. All my former partners can confirm I also call that dressed for battle. He faced a hand-picked opponent, Akira Tozawa. Like, hey, this would have killed on a 2016 PWG show. And the standard they did here was so damn smooth. You can tell that they've got two excellent workers in there. Like, Akira Tozawa is a really good wrestler. He's just a comedy character. He's just a comedy geek in WWE, so no one takes him seriously. He's not a character to take seriously. But every now and then, it's just nice to get that little reminder. We're like, here with Gunther. Like, no. He's great. He's definitely very good. We also got Kaiser, Dunn and Penta in a triple threat. Ohio had a lovely time, the platform for WWE's new shiny luchador fully working. Kaiser won, though, stealing Penta's win on Dunn to focus the feud back up to the two and away from Birmingham. Jackie interviewed Rhea Ripley out in the crowd, hyping the Chamber and Ripley's title defense against Io Sky next week, so I will talk about that next week. Sticking with the women, Roxanne Perez had a backstage chinwag with Bayley. Wasn't really much more to say about that. Continuing to be heated heels, New Day faced the LWO, literally changing up their finisher to be Wood driving his heels into the opponent instead of the elbow. The post-match beatdown broken up by Dragon Lee. Remember him? Dominic Mysterio paid for getting in Bron Baker's path to AJ Styles by getting a match with the champion. It's here in the other notes for the exact reason that you expect. Judgment Day at ringside, Bron the badass kicking ass until the DQ numbers. And I wrote that before actually watching the match, so I saw them there outside, like, this is ending a DQ. Like, 100%. I think it was even, like, in the final hours. Like, there's no way this is, like, a match. This is just gonna be a bit. But also, totally not against them setting up folk like AJ Styles and Finn Balor to dance with Breaker this WrestleMania. Bron Breaker successfully fighting off the Judgment Day and getting a stare down with Finn. It's like, oh, that's both AJ and Finn tease. Like, you could do a triple threat. Could be fun. But that brings me to the end of the show this week. Monday Night Raw is continuing this habit of having a couple of good segments or a few decent things, but it's such a long show that it outstays its welcome. The live crowd, Ohio was a great crowd, but even they were tired by the main event. They got really into it into the end. I feel like the ending of that main event was generally really well done, but it seemed like production was doing everything it can to hide the fact that, it's like, yeah, we know that the Women's Tag Team Championships are main eventing, we know, so here's all this production stuff to drag your attention attention elsewhere, which wasn't exactly appreciated. But they stopped doing that for that final part of the match and the crowd, and I feel like if I was to go online, I'd probably see properly the positive things about that main event, about that title change, because it was a really hot title change in the end. It just would have been nice if, you know, it was focused up. But you can maybe make it feel important by putting a platform on it rather than the production dragging me everywhere, so it felt like they were trying to hide the fact that, we know. Put some stock behind it. Make it feel like a big deal. It's the main event. Hype it as such. Just build it like that. Don't be ashamed. Have a confidence in your product. But yeah, Monday Night Raw continues that trend of being mostly, like, you can move on, it's fine. SmackDown as well, just those two segments, the Rock segment you can seek out on YouTube, obviously, and different things, TikToks, whatever. But the shows aren't worth watching at the moment. And that seems to be a Triple H trend where it's all right for you to check into one or two shows during the build, but it's not super necessary for you to watch every single week. But because everything makes sense and it all flows through, you can watch one episode, get the gist of where it's probably going, and then when you get to the pay-per-view, you realise it has continued to build competently in that direction. We are out of the era of just moments happening and storylines just being dropped all over the place. A far, far more competent show, but also one that you just don't need to watch. For me, it's no surprise that the Netflix numbers haven't stayed up. As I watch this, I'm just like, their company is white hot with momentum at the moment. But the weekly television shows continue to kind of just be like, it's fine. There's not really a lot to get excited about. They're competently building up to the next thing. That said, they've done a really good job building the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, and I expect it to be a damn solid show. By WWE standards. When I use that same sentence to describe an AEW show, I'm being like, oh, Ospreay versus Pac, I am so incredibly excited. But when I talk about WWE type of stuff, I'm like, no, it's going to be like a really solid show. But by WWE standards, which means it's going to be hyping up and making a big spectacle ahead of WrestleMania, setting up for that, getting you excited for WrestleMania. It's going to do a really good job of that, rather than providing an excellent match. But I like both companies presenting something different. I don't tune into WWE for great wrestling, and I feel like if you do tune into WWE for great wrestling, you are guaranteed to be disappointed every single time, because that's not what they provide. That's not their thing. But anyway, I've ran well over, but it definitely feels like one way I'm going to be cutting out quite a lot of content, so don't expect a long show. But anyway, I will be back this time next week to talk about the Elimination Chamber live from Toronto and the Monday Night Raw after, as we hurtle down the road to WrestleMania, because when I come to you next week, it will finally be on the final long stretch to the show itself. No more stops on the road. This is it. Raw and SmackDowns all the way. So I'm looking forward to next week, because I get to actually talk about the Elimination Chamber, and I feel like I can already feel it, that I feel like I'm going to be walking out of that pretty positive. They've done enough setting up where it's going to take something miraculous to truly disappoint me. They've got enough plates spinning. It's not just what are the match qualities. For me, it's how well are they building up the WrestleMania show itself? How good does it feel like I'm being paid off for getting invested in those characters' stories on the roads of this year? That's what WWE wants to be judged on, being an entertainment company. Fine, that's how I'll judge you. That's how I judge you. You say you write good stories? Fine, that's how I'll judge you. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. I bid you adieu. Everybody, go and play Yakuza. What's it bloody called? Murray, what's it called? Yakuza Like a Dragon Pirate in Hawaii. There we go. The greatest pirate game ever made. So anyway, with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.